face. He stares in the eyes of the man who despises him.
And you see, this is my real mother. Said when I came out the womb, my little black sis was raised in the air like this. And she was proud, because I was going to take after her and not give it to her.
Welcome to Flight 3D. This is your captain speaking. We ask that you please note the emergency exits and safety signs in the event our journey becomes just too deep.
All right, we're going to get into the language that I like. Only forward to get powerful, right?
Super Nigga can't put a basketball down. He leaped tall, Super Nigga, in a single bound. Super Nigga ain't got no degree, he ain't got no time for that. Street corner, crack houses, projects, his natural habitat. Super Nigga got super strength, speed, and agility. So it's understandable when the cops beat him down to the best of their ability. Super Nigga has no supervision. Instead, he has super issues. Between 17 and 25 super inches used to satisfy them super inches.
Well, they clone little black girls who won't die but fight. Well, they clone little black girls who supplement stamina for endless struggles to write. Well, they clone little black girls like Asada, Sonia, Tubman, knowing what they know. Well, they clone little black girls like Nikki, Zora, Mommy, Grandma. Orchestrate train.
Ain't nobody got more than us. Aspiring artists spit saliva in their palms, producing hits, making noise with their fists. Lanky limbros with afros break beats and pop lock on dance flows. Made a
let me talk to you for a second.
Hello. This is Industry Mondays, the business of spoken word. Alrighty, and we're just here. We're going to just do today a replay of an old show. So we're going to take a moment as we listen to some spoken word, and then we're going to come up and re-upload the show that featured Abyss. If there are any poets out there, the number is 646-716-7994. If you like to spit, now is the time. You know, it's an open mic at the moment. And we're going to do a replay of the show with Abyss. The number again is 646-716-7994. Give us a call. And, you know, share the mic. So next we are going to go to... Okay, we're going to hit Evangelist, and this is Lamar Anthony Hill from his album, Blackmail.
My mother is an evangelist, and I'm convinced that she won't be content until my voice is in a pulpit. I said, my mother is an evangelist, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a more fervent servant. She is fire baptized, and I've watched men find God through her eyes. I said, my mother is an evangelist. Every Sunday she leads souls to Christ. But I tell her, Ma, I'm a poet. Every night I lead souls into the light. I go where your preacher would not dare. Y'all mistaking these words for poems. These ain't poems, these are prayers. This is how I talk to God, and y'all just happen to be here. These are all my fears and aspirations, wrapped in the swaddling clothes and packed in a tomb for 3 days. Then the spirit moves the writer's block out of the way and resurrects the words I need to say, and they ascend off of the page while hundreds of people bear witness, so that generations from now will still be able to appreciate it, and I can still hear my mother praying for my soul, hoping that one day I would hear clearly and find my way back to the ministry. And it's hard for her to understand, because she's almost as stubborn as I am, that I ain't out here chasing a dream. I didn't choose poetry. Poetry chose me. I liberate souls every time I write a poem, and I bring down the walls of Jericho every time I perform, and I don't wait for them to come to me. I go where they live at. I mean, even God is a poet. You need only read the 23rd Psalm to understand that. How ridiculous must a writer be to say, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff are my pen and my pad, they comfort me. That's why I get love, no matter where I go in this country. I used to contemplate suicide at least 3 times a week before poetry, and I don't tell you that to get your sympathy. I tell you that because I know at least 3 people in the audience are going through it with me. But who would have known? Who would have known that my own words could deliver me? Who would have known that I could get closer to God with every metaphor and simile? Who would have known that something as beautiful as a poem could harness so much of God's pure energy? And I ain't nobody. I'm just a ghetto bastard from an unforgiving Northeast city. But with this pen, and with this pad, and with this mic, I'm larger than life. I fight the good fight, so when I'm dead and gone, you can bury my ashes in the same tomb where they buried Lazarus. Cause 100 years from now, some young poet is gonna be thumbing through the CDs in his great-grandmother's attic, and he gonna raise me from the dead. I said my mother is an evangelist. Every Sunday she leads souls to Christ, but I tell her slow and deliberate so that she will never forget that I am a poet, and I'm following the will of God, and I'm far closer to him at this very moment than I could ever be in a pulpit.
In the beginning, it was all good. Cause it's just like every other kid in the hood. Like, last time this boy cried, when he woke up one morning, realized he was a fatherless child. Daddy never there, showed him no love. Learned to emulate thugs, bust slugs with the intent to kill. Ran these streets, hide in a cable bill. Paranoid, cause these streets are stressing him. His motto, ain't nobody getting the best of him. Round these parts, drug wars make the guns spark. Triggers ain't got no heart. Women are hoes, kids are the way. God, that's just the word in the Bible. They pray for death on their rivals. Out here, nobody cares. You can smell genocide in the air. From the corners, the kids gave birth to crackers and chicken heads. They were misled by some fathers, old heads. They learned to cop reek, work off the reekers. They went to war with the dredge. Better off dead, it was this old lady said. She spoke truth to power. In his darkest hour, they closed his casket at 19. Rest in peace, t-shirts, laced his whole team. His mother crying, dressed in black. Searched the church, front to back. Even on this day, a daddy he lacked. You're a self-exiled monarch from your castle and home. Making you a king without a throne. Making your son a prince without a crown. Look at him now, he lived and died a fatherless child. And this must be supported karma. Like Sonia Sanchez being my father's baby mama. So you see my dad thanking for me, but give me this gift indirectly. Top 5 dead alive wordsmith in hip-hop, R&B, or poetry. So if you think you'll outright me, forget it. And you can take that to heart like God said. Maybe when I'm going to give me credit, but right now, I'm that boy you want that boy. I'm like Langston Hughes on steroids. Alonzo and shot my little girl, little boy. Better father than my daddy ever was. And the poetry was a drug every day. I'd be taking it in the head and blowing the flag. And sleeping out my soul through you. Sit next to me, might catch a contact. But I wish boys was a female. So I could dive in face first. Put my mouth where she did first. Grab her by hair, slap on the backside and ask her, whose poetry is this? She say it's yours, daddy. And 9 months later, she'll make me happy. Give me 2 miracles. I name one wordplay, the other lyrical. Just so I can walk up to people and say, did you see my lyrical wordplay? Never had a daddy, but I always had poetry. So I gotta thank God for giving me this literary style. And maybe this makes us even. For me growing up, a fatherless child.
Daily, I ain't got to think about it. Thank you, Jesus. All right, there you go. All right. So the next piece that I'm going to do is called Heaven's Key. And this is to my sisters. Brothers, y'all got to listen. To my sisters. And basically, we all have our vices, have our issues, we all have our diseases. And a lot of us don't want to talk about it, but one of our diseases is to talk about sex. You give your draw to any dude that says, hi, how you doing? You cute. I like your weave. Your shoes are nice.
I like your weave.
I got you a bottle of water. Can I get some? You know what? I'm just being real. A lot of us have that issue because we ain't securing ourselves as queens to understand that niggas got to work to get into heaven. I'm sorry. You got to work to get into heaven. So this piece is actually inspired from a message that I heard. I heard a minister say that my womb is sacred, a place where God makes his greatest creations, that in between my legs isn't a place of recreation, and anyone who gets to lay with me must consider it a blessing. But here's the lesson. Because sisters, we let unbelievers into heaven, giving out free slurpee samples like it's 7-Eleven. No wonder many brothers believe salvation is free. But there's a cost to everything, and in the end, we pay. We pay in tears and we want him to stay, but he can't. Because every night, his wife is expecting him to lay with her. Or how about when we let them in when they say, I love you? Oh, now, no verb. Allowing verbiage to fertilize our foliage so he has no inspiration to see our work. Clean hands be no work so he can't fertilize our earth. Angry wounds and broken hearts are what's left. No wonder we birth God of destruction and death. And yes, we can say that we can blame the men, but the responsibility of guarding us starts with self. Thank you. I'm sorry, it's throwing me off. But the responsibility of us starts with self. You are your own gatekeeper. Stop leaving the doors open to heaven expecting someone else to take care of it. Love yourself. Love your health. And this ease has more than just to do with STDs. It has to do when your spirit bleeds. Because you've allowed an energy that has leaked into your soul carrying disrespect, disregard, and it's uncontrolled. Why give a weak man such a strong hold on your ability to produce? And if you think that nigga's no good, guess what? You no good too. So what should we do? So what should we do? We should stop living in the lie and daily walk in the truth. See, we are queens, goddesses, beautiful in spirit. Our blackness is our connection to this earth, the universe, and the sun, which is why we glow when we in it. Live in the Isis spirit. One king for your queen, one God for your heaven. Stop letting jokers in. You got a football field. Stop letting brothers play with you. If that nigga spit one thing and live another, guess what? He gaming you. But no different from the slave master's speech that seems so sweet. He enslaving you. But because he looked like you, it's cool. And everybody plays the fool sometimes. But I wish one time would do, but y'all know how we do. We be like, girl, he ain't do got a job. Maybe do or don't live with his mama. And he fine too. I get it, sis. But will he take care of you? Provide your needs, take care of your feet. Does that nigga love you enough to put on the condom, or does he have raw expectation with ease? Does he get into heaven without lifetime admission and no fee? Keep giving heaven away like penny candy, and you find yourself pennies away from love and happiness, praying for God to set you free. It's kind of hard for him to do that, and you want to hold the key. That's that peace.
Right about now.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, this is straight fire right here, homie. Let's go. Yeah, make me a believer. Somebody get Kanye. That's why Lil Wayne snatched up Nicki Minaj. The game's wide open. I'm trying to strange. They on some lightweight. Oh, you really hating him and the game, man? That's what I say. I keep trying to tell you, it's fire boulet. Drop the over metal. That's the cool CD. So why when you see me, it's still full of teeth. Yeah, I get sidetracked a little. That's the ADD. Stop blaming me and hop on ease. It's fresh. Keep trying to tell you. Spell it out your junk. That's paraphernalia. I get calls like.
been going, zoning to zoning to the doc. Say, dick, you ride, get up on it. Few things gone for me. Easy on the eyes. Did he feel real? Ass still mine. Keep that jibber jabber down to a minimum. Got other rappers like, nah, man, I'm feeling them. Yo, let's see where this might go. She actually get a shot, man, she just might blow. So, don't tell me, tell a friend. You know what we call that, right? Viral marketing. iTunes, YouTube, hard to keep up. Facebook me, Twitter me up. It's Vern's baby, Ferris to the Uno. Heavy on the arugula, talk with prosciutto. Everything's mainstream and me, I actually read your fine ass. But that's just on the mental though. So when I say hey, y'all say yo. Come on. That is why shorty get down. Wish I could move like the chicks in the video. Few amaretto salads, and here we go. And the beat is bonkers. I bump that style, CJ the kids often. Had a mob deep, real murder music moment. Smell at that hip hop moment. Live for the funk, die for the funk madness. Boot camp came, broke down the mathematics. And Wu Tang came and knocked it off the atlas. Chicken grabbed it, but now I've always had it. West was the west and the east. Two kings had beef, now they both defeat. That's a chest move, feel it in my chest, oh. How many gon' die before I talk to them? We young, party, have fun. Throw they dubs up in the club like what? And to be honest, them party like, that's my only sacrifice till it's paper's right. Come on.
This is Master Griot Radio, channel 13 on your NBBTA internet radio dial. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and I am your host for this moment in time. It's time for purpose-driven words, shaping thoughts, building minds, true wealth, communities, and legacies.
If my words had wings, they'd fly to you each day.
When it's raining hard outside, can your roof still keep out the leaks inside? If it's time for a new roof, get your roofing installed the right way with Sears. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. You can save $500 if you call right now. Sears licensed fully insured contractors can get your roofing job done right. Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance, and you'll save $500 if you call now. So, for roofing done right, call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. That's Sears Roofing. Call right now and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
Blog Talk Radio. This is Master Griot Radio, channel 13 on your NBBTA internet radio dial. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and I am your host for this moment in time. It's time for purpose-driven words, shaping thoughts, building minds, true wealth, communities, and legacies.
If my words had wings, they'd fly to you each day.
Welcome. Welcome to Deep. Welcome to the sociopolitical satire of HBO deaf poet Tommy Bottoms and Darian Duchon. This is Master Griot Radio, and we are celebrating National Poetry Month each Monday during the month of April. 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, and 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is, we're just celebrating poetry, and this week we're going to just check out the political and social satire of Tommy Bottoms and Darian Duchon. These two brothers are extreme intellectuals as well as funny. They're just straight funny. They bring it deep. They bring it to the mind. And we're just going to sit down and ask them about life, politics, pimping, poetry, about gangsterism and everything. They had something to say on each subject. So right now we are going to check out a little Pimpin' and Poetry by Tommy Bottoms. And then we're going to come back and bring our guests on. All right? So we're going to bring this up right now. And I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, everyone. I am your host for this moment in time. And we are just grateful to have these two brothers in the house on the line. And we're just going to listen to a little Pimpin' and Poetry. And also, too, if anybody's in the house right now, we can open up the show with a cipher. So if you're interested, hit up a 10-minute cipher.
Say, fuck you, Tommy. Say, fuck you, Tommy. Say, fuck you, Tommy. Say, fuck you, Tommy. Now, I'm just one metaphor away from shocking the world. So I'm going to kill Uncle Sam and have Lady Liberty trick it for me in front of a liquor store. And then the very next day, I'll be on the front page of the USA Today with the headlines to say, Bottoms cleared of all charges. The murder was ruled justified, and sometimes you got to let a hoe be a hoe. Now, I done traveled a long road, but I still got a long way to go. And my life is like a highway with many forks in the road. But I'm prepared to go toe-to-toe with my destiny. And I know I blazed over mics, but you still haven't seen the best of me. And I hope you're not standing next to me when I decide to blow the spot up. Cause see, this verbal scrap will crack your Adam's apple. So some of this shit I'm about to say will be hard to swallow. But I'm going to still give it to you full throttle while I'm clutching a Heineken bottle. See, I put my heart into this art. If this poetry game was an ocean, then I would be a shark. And pretty soon it won't be safe to come to these open mic spot after dark.
Okay, we're going to bring our callers back on the line. If you guys are listening in, they just had called in. I'm sorry, I was muted out. I was trying to bring the callers in on the line. We have Tommy back. Darian, if you're out there. Okay, they're back on the line. Hold on. Hi, Tommy?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Hello?
Yes. All righty, and hold on.
Okay.
Okay. Is this Darian?
Yes, it is.
Hey, how are you? I apologize.
No worries. I'm real good.
Okay. So we want to welcome you here to Master Griot Radio. And
Thank you for having me.
Right.
Appreciate it.
Okay. All righty. So if each of you brothers can take a minute and introduce yourself. Let's start with Darian.
Where to begin? So I'm Darian Duchon. I'm primarily an actor. I kind of got into the spoken word scene in the last maybe four or five years. I'd always kind of been very interested spoken word when I went down when I was at NYU, and from there I was a frequent visitor of the New Eureka Poets Cafe, which is always kind of enthralled by the poets and stuff down there. And but kind of had never really thought that, you know, that I'd ever kind of be doing it at some point. But then as kind of, you know, the years went on, and particularly, which is what actually is what we're going to be talking about tonight, which is great, particularly it was right around the time when a certain president had gotten reelected, where I was feeling like I needed to somehow speak out and kind of be a bit more involved. I was just really kind of frustrated with where our country was going. And so from there, that was kind of the fuel that kind of got me reading some of my stuff. And so, yeah, so basically Bush made me a poet. So thank you, George W. Bush.
All right, all right. And Tommy Bottoms, could you please take a moment and introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Tommy Bottoms. I'm out of Atlanta, Georgia, originally from Indiana. Been a full-time artist now for about the last 7 years or so. Did a few HBO appearances, BET appearances. I've had the opportunity to travel all over the country, you know, performing and talking to kids and, you know, performing at universities and stuff like that. So just grinded it out, written a few articles, newsletters, things like that. You know, primarily talk about politics and social things like that, you know. It had a little gangster element to it, but overall, I enjoyed the whole experience, you know what I'm saying? Just it's been definitely a roller coaster, but wouldn't change a moment of it.
Okay. So I guess my next question, well, first, do you guys know each other as artists?
No, I don't think we ever met. Actually, before the I looked my man up on the you know, you got a Google folk now. That's the new thing.
That's funny. I did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Look at you, my man. Is. Okay, that's what's up. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. All you gotta do is Google somebody, and then boom.
Yeah,
if
exactly,
you're not if
exactly.
you're not on Google, then you're kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah,
if this,
yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Okay, well, then that's good. That's good. Bring you guys together. We got New York and ATL in the house. And
right.
And Darian is a phenomenal poet. I first encountered you on FameCast.
Yeah, that's what I that was the thing I had clicked on. I had seen. Yeah.
The short
the number one
FameCast. Yeah, they cut out poetry.
The short lived FameCast was spoken word, indeed. I think I had Number One Gangster up there. For people who don't know what the Number One Gangster was, that was a piece I did on my favorite person, again, George W. Bush. And basically the way that starts is I basically started out and I'm talking about, you know, I'm the dopest gangster, and it's not really until latter end of the poem that you figure out that I'm talking about Bush. And again, I was just kind of looking at this ideal of the gangsterization of American government. And Tommy talks about that a lot too, in a lot of his pieces as well, just about the hustle and basically what the nature of capitalism is.
Okay, so then we'll just start out with that topic. That'll be our first topic: gangsterism in the United States and beyond. So, Mr. Bottoms, what do you have to say about it?
About gangsterism? I mean, I guess that's a pretty big subject, you know what I'm saying? I'm assuming you're talking from, like, a political point of view, I guess, but I'm probably a little more untrustworthy of everyone, you know what I'm saying? I know my man talking about boys, but I think they all crooked, you know what I'm saying? I don't think anyone is any better than the other one, whether they're Republican or Democrat, whether it's Bush or Barack, you know what I'm saying? They're all politicians, and they all have an agenda, you know what I'm saying? So I don't necessarily be like, oh, yeah, this cat's got it in for me. They all got an agenda. They all look out for each other. You know? they all come out of the same couple of schools, you know what I'm saying? Yale, Harvard, you know, those kind of things. And so I don't really look at it like it's all gangster stuff to me, you know what I'm saying? And the people at the bottom got to deal with the, you know what I'm saying? If you look at, like, the little housing crisis and the collapse of the stock market and stuff like that, everybody had their hand out. Everybody was being gangster in it as far as being greedy, you know what I'm saying, from the top to the bottom. But at the end of the day, the people at the top, you know what I'm saying, ain't going to be in the soup line, though, you know what I'm saying, when it's all said and done. When the bottom fall out, you know, they still got a couple hundred million that they sitting on, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only difference, you know what I'm saying, is the level of access you have, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of more like access politics or access capitalism, you know what I'm saying? We all capitalists, you know, we all trying to get it on some level, you know what I mean? You know, I think a lot of me and my mates had this conversation about, you know, his thing was having compassionate capitalism. I said that's an oxymoron. There's no such thing. You know what I'm saying? At some level or another, greed always gonna come into it. You know what I'm saying? And that's just the nature of the beast. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of where you come in at it. You know, what level you come in at it. You know what I'm saying?
Let me ask you this: do you believe in an ideal of moderate capitalism as opposed to extreme capitalism? Is that an oxymoron?
I think it's, you know what I'm saying, it's just like looking like for example, people look at, like, okay, people sell dope, right? And you see a guy, he gets so much money and they be like, why didn't you just stop? You know what I'm saying? You stacked $100,000 or $1 million, $2 million. They'd be like, man, you got all that money. Why didn't you stop? What's the incentive to stop, though? And that's where there's no such thing as moderate capitalism, because there is no incentive to stop. You know what I'm saying? If you make $1 million, why not $100 million? Because the same energy it takes to make $1 million, it takes the same amount of energy to make $100 million. You don't exert any more energy. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of how hard you want to go. And you know what I'm saying? But there is no incentive to stop. You know what I'm saying? People always go ahead.
What if the incentive is your conscience? I mean,
you more than likely you're not going to amass anything if that's what you'll make. If you're a capitalist, you know what I mean, that then your motivation is to make money. You know, a corporation, the only goal, like, corporations are just, you know, people look up, they're just faceless, not human beings, but faceless people in the sense of their number one goal is to make profit. So if that means that, they got to pay workers less, like, for example, you know, the wage gap between, you know, in 1973, the average CEO only made 30 times as much as the person that worked at the bottom. By the time it started hitting the 80s and the 90s, they were making 300 times as much. You know what I'm saying? Because the nature of the beast is to increase your profits, make the shareholders and, you know, happy, and, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I mean, they're, slavery was based on the same thing. A lot of people get caught up with the idea that slavery was there's two different things. Slavery was a social system and it's also an economic system. Slavery is the rawest form of capitalism, you know what I'm saying? But it's really, you can never really abolish it. You can only really abolish the social system of it. But slavery as an economic system has always existed, will always exist as long as you have capitalism. You know what I'm saying? If you're working for $4.25 an hour, whatever, I don't even know what minimum wage is no more, whatever it is, $7, $8, whatever it is, that's no different than being a slave. Because a slave got minimum wage. You know what I'm saying? We got to think that they didn't get anything, but they did. They got a roof over their head. They got just enough to eat. They got a few clothes on their back. And that's what you get with minimum wage. You get just enough to survive. You know, there's no such thing as free labor, only cheap labor. You know what I'm saying? So as long as you have capitalism, you know, you always have slavery. Then you can get into the social aspects of, you know, the race and class and things like that. That's two separate things. But slavery and at the heart of it, it's an economic institution. You know what I'm saying? So that's the heart of it all right there.
Well, I have a statement to make regarding capitalism. One, the truth is, There's no true earning interest on money. Only so much money is printed. So if you print $100 and somebody and you earn interest on your money and you make 50 and you earn interest on it, it has to be short in somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So
we do live in a fiat currency system, which means that the money is only really worth the paper it's printed on, which is why a lot of people, like, you know, a lot of Muslim nations, they don't believe in interest. You know what I'm saying? They don't
mm-hmm.
believe in the idea of loaning money for interest. But, like, the system that we live in, like, a lot of people look at Barack as the savior, the things that he's doing. All this stimulus package thing is getting ready to throw the country into a world spin. You know what I'm saying? Because they're printing this money out of thin air. There's nothing to back it. You know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? They're just pumping in double the currency that's out there, and that just all it does is create inflation. So now, in the next couple of years, your same dollar's gonna have less the spending power. You know what I'm saying? And everything else is gonna be that much more to pay for. You know what I'm saying? That's why if you look at like Zimbabwe right now is the poster child for hyperinflation. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they actually have a $50 million bill. You know what I'm saying? And a $50 million bill gets you a loaf of bread. You know what I'm saying? And that's you know, that's inflation. And that's what there was times even in this country where, you know, or not during like World War II, you know, you might have to have a wheelbarrow full of money. You know what I'm saying? Because that's inflation. Where you know what I'm saying? A lot of people just think inflation is just spending, you know, prices going up, and that is part of it. But really, what it is that it's how much your dollar is, you know, the amount of money that's actually in the system. That, you know what I'm saying, as far as the demand for the currency. So if you have a lot of money out there and with little demand, you have high inflation. You know what I'm saying? Then you also have with deflation, like back during Christmas, right, in this last year when everybody was slashing prices. You know what I'm saying? So they can get everybody in the store. That was deflation, because you could go in and get that same $400 dress for $200 now. You know what I'm saying? Because, and that's why a lot of them retail companies was folding, because they wasn't making any money. You know what I'm saying? But just pumping all this money into the economy and borrowing all this money from China eventually, they're gonna eventually say this money's not worth anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not gonna buy any more of your treasury bills anymore. Because your money's not worth anything. You Americans don't pay your bills. You know what I'm saying? And pretty soon, I'm going to tell you, another 2 or 3 years, man, it's going to be people. This love affair with Obama going to be over with. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be over with. And, you know, everybody love him now, but give it another 2 or 3 years, everybody going to be like, they're going to turn their back on this dude. You know what I'm saying? Because the things he's doing right now is often, you know. I'm not gonna make the judgment whether he's doing it on purpose or if he's got some bigger agenda, things like that. But I'm just saying, when you pump all that extra money into the economy and there's nothing, they're printing it out of thin air. You know what I'm saying? That money's not backed. Money hasn't been backed by anything like gold or silver or anything for the last 30 years. You know what I'm saying? So it's only worth the value that we put on it. It's only worth $100 because we say it's worth $100.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So
it's really only worth.
My question is this. I am a Obama supporter, and I do have some hope that we can hopefully get out of this mess. But I definitely and I'm understanding where some other people are coming from. But my question to you is in regards to just the financial meltdown and the financial crisis of where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
If the stimulus money isn't the solution, then what is the solution?
The solution?
To let just the whole thing kind of fall apart?
Exactly. That is the solution. It has to start over. You know what I'm saying? Because really what happened this is essentially what we're doing. The reason that the economy has collapsed is for the last 20 years, 30 years, they told Americans to borrow money that they couldn't afford to pay back. You know what I'm saying? The reason the housing market collapsed is because people bought houses they couldn't afford. You know what I'm saying? People go out getting credit cards and running, getting $40,000, $50,000 credit of stuff they knew they would never be able to pay back. Well, that money has to come from somewhere. So for what's been happening is for the last 30 years, who you think's been flipping the bill for all that money that we couldn't afford to pay? That money got to come from somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if you sell CDs or not, right? Let's say I got a credit. You got a credit card machine, right? You out in the street, you do, you perform, you selling your CDs, right? You go out, you got a credit card machine. Somebody buys $1,000, $10,000. Let's say it's $10,000 worth of CDs off of you, right? Now you got a little piece of thing that says, okay, I got $10,000. You take that $10,000, and you go buy this, you go buy that, you go, you know, you pay, you go to the mall, you buy some clothes, and then people at the mall, they take that money you just paid, they paying their employees, the employees take that money, they go buy stuff they need to buy, you know, for their household or whatever they're going to do. But if I don't pay that $10,000 credit card bill that I for your CDs, where did the money come from? You know what I'm saying? And that's what we're dealing with. All this thing, the bottom has fell out. The check, the bill is due. You know what I'm saying? So really what we, you know what I'm saying? Like, so right now what we're doing is they telling, what if I, if you was a, you know, so basically what if I was a credit counselor and I told you, oh, to get you back in shape, you know what I'm saying? You know, I know you're in a lot of debt. So, yo, to get you out of debt, the answer is to go get more debt. You'll be like, man, are you crazy? And that's what we're doing right now. You know what I'm saying? Where do you think all this $300 billion is coming from? There's $400 billion here, $50 billion there, $175 billion. They're borrowing it from China. They're borrowing it from Saudi Arabia at interest. So next year, these next couple of years, they're going to be paying $40, $50 billion a year in interest alone. You know what I'm saying? But who do you think, who's going to be paying for that? We don't have the money for that. And the only way they're going to get it is to tax the people. And who's going to, and what politician is going to run on the idea of, I'm going to raise y'all taxes? You know what I'm saying?
Well, also, I think, by that same token, though, it's like, what politician is going to kind of just lay over and let it all?
Exactly. That's the whole point of it. That's the politics of it. Exactly. No politician will do that. You know what I'm saying? And that's the whole point of it. But that is the only answer. But what politician is going to do that? None of them. You know what I'm saying? Because all of them run on a populist message of, you know, I'm for the people. And none of these policies are for the people. They're for the people who get them in office. You know what I'm saying? And there's no way they're going to sit there and be like, hey, we only thing we can do is throw our hands up. They have to, quote unquote, do something. And that's the only, but the answer is, you know, America has to suffer for a little bit because we've been drunk on our credit for the last 30 years, drunk on buying and overspending. Living way beyond our means. And the only way you're going to get through it is to let the market going to reset itself. You know what I'm saying? It'll eventually correct itself. But there will be a downtime. It just has to bottom out. You know what I'm saying? And that's the only answer. But
well,
no politician's ever going to say that.
Right. Well, I mean, so according, you know, if that's true, then you're right. Then it's inevitable and we will suffer. And that will be what it's going to be, you know. I'm hoping that it don't come to that, though.
But see, the biggest gangster thing going on right now is that the president can't do anything about the economy. You know what I'm saying? That they can't hurt the economy and they cannot help the economy. But they'll take credit for it and they'll blame the other guy for it. Bush has nothing. The president, the Fed chairman, the people who set the interest rates. The people who control, say, how much money is going to get pumped in the system or not get pumped in. People like Bernanke and Alan Greenspan, you know, he was the Fed chairman for about 30 years, whatever it was. Those people control the economy. The president is just a figurehead that has to create the confidence because, you know, it all has to work on the idea of confidence of people believing in the system because we're working with a fiat system. People have to have confidence in the system, and that's what the president is there for. But actually, the president can't do anything. You know what I'm saying? That, you know, Bush, people think Brock isn't doing nothing, but what Bush started in the sense of when he hired Henry Paulson to be the Treasury Secretary, first thing he came in and said, okay, we got to give all these banks some bread. And he was from one of these cats. He was a Wall Street cat. You know what I'm saying? Just like how they all acted like they was all surprised when AIG was getting their bonuses. You don't think they knew that? They all knew that. But they never thought it was going to be a media storm on it. So they was all like, oh, this is an outrage. They knew it. They all got kicked. They all got donation campaign contributions from the AIG and all these companies. You know what I'm saying? It's all, you know what I'm saying? I guess the whole point we're talking about, the gangsterism is the fact that we, you know what I'm saying, these cats play this game and they put on a show for us on TV. And we sit back and, you know, we choose sides between, like, it's WWF. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Oh, my man, you know, my man is Butch. Oh, you know, and they all act like they hate each other. You know what I'm saying? They get on TV and be like, oh, yeah, you know, this guy, he's not for the American people. He's not patriotic. He's going to do this. And they all do all this stuff posturing on TV. And you know what they do when they get the cameras go off? They go out to lunch with each other. You know what I'm saying? They go. Their kids go to the same school. You know what I'm saying? They go to the same gym. They hang out with each other. These guys aren't enemies. They're all part of. They all just choose a side. You know what I'm saying? It's like whether you like Michigan State or North Carolina, they all just ball players at the end of the day. These cats don't hate each other. You know what I mean? They ain't enemies. But that's the gangster of it—the fact that we sit back and choose sides. Like, oh, Bush did this. Bush did that. Bush ain't doing nothing but what. If all presidents do what's good for preserving the nation, and they just figurehead to keep this thing going. You know what I'm saying?
All righty. We're going to take a break from that. And that was just, we played like 28 minutes of an old show, which was called Deep, the Social Political Satire of Tommy Bottoms and Darian Deshawn. And that was done in April 2009, just to let you know. It's weird. You thought that was a conversation that was just had yesterday. We have a caller from the 832. We're going to bring him on. Caller from the 832.
Hello, how you doing?
Hi, Max.
Yes.
How are you, sir? How are you?
I'm okay.
All right. So what would you like to share? I know we've been talking in the chat room.
I was listening to the brother that was just speaking. He was making a lot of sense, you know. I have 6 seconds, right? Hello?
Hmm?
Okay. I am a writer of 3 books. And I just wanna I like to speak for people, you know, with mental disabilities. And I've been writing for a very long time. And I don't believe in medicine, you know. I don't. I'm not for medication. This is my aspect of it. It has a major effect on people, and hello? Hello?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry. I just muted out because it was some background noise. I'm here.
Okay. For those people who are take medication, just keep keep doing what you love to do. And everything will be all right.
Okay. So do you want to tell us your books, where we can purchase them at? I can put it in the chat room. Are they available online at all?
Yeah, you can go to exclusives.com, www.exclusives.com.
Okay, you said www.what?
Exclusives.com, Xlibris.
Okay. All right. And the name of the book?
The first book is called Smiling Through the Pain.
Smiling?
Through the Pain.
Okay. And Smiling Through the Pain. All right.
And the second book is called The Other Side. And the third book in the process of getting typed up right now. It's called Poor and Successful. Poor and Successful.
Okay. And what's your name again?
Larry Smith, the third.
Okay.
And then that, that third book, I went particularly in the mind, like speaking, you know, basically, what you put in your mind is what you get out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I tuned into this show.
Okay. Alrighty, well, what we'll do, we're going to hit up another piece of poetry. Okay, about 30 more minutes, we're going to hit up another piece of poetry. And two more pieces, and maybe we'll have enough time for Max to call in if his phone charges. But until then, we do want to give Maximus Parsons a shout out. Love you, Max. Love your heart. You know, Max just wants us to know. You know, there are three things that we need now. We need to really focus and, you know, realize what's going on around us, you know. We're being enslaved. And, you know, there's some serious things we need to actually look at. I know we don't really want to deal with it, but there's some serious things going on around us, and before we know it, we'll be being carted off on buses. People will be coming out of our neighborhoods and never coming back. Martial law has already been implemented. Our property will be taken. We will be shuffled off to places. So we're being killed, hunted, and enslaved right now, and our children are even targets. So we just need to be mindful of what's actually going on around us, and if ever was a time for us to come together, be strategic, and start teaching our own children and policing our own selves, and, you know, stop begging the government to do everything for us, because they'll do for us, but, you know, it's always going to be in their interest at the end, you know, stop trying to make them do the right thing. Everyone's going to do what's in interest for themselves. So, you know, it's time for us to do the right thing. We can homeschool. You can go online and formally educate your children. And if you can't do it by yourself, hey, if, you know, few people get together, like 5-6 women can get together and homeschool a group of children. Somebody's good at arts and crafts. Somebody may be better at math. Somebody may be better at other things. But, you know, we pull together in groups. We can get some things done. And it's time for our men to step up and, you know, police our own neighborhoods, police ourselves, you know. just, you know, be willing. You know, I mean, hey, at any given moment, wherever we live, whether it's Philly or South Carolina, we could walk out this door and be shot and killed at any given moment. So we have no control over when we are going to die. So, you know, what's the deal? Tell a brother, you know, you see a brother acting out, a female acting out, tell him to do the right thing. You don't have to be mean. They cuss you out. Oh, wow. You know, nobody can take your time. Our time is designated. No one can take it. So, you know, to that vein, let's just go ahead and just go ahead and just let, you know, teach our own, police our own, stop being afraid of our own neighborhoods, stop being afraid of each other, you know, and just, you know, keep it simple and to ourselves. Just go ahead and do what we need to do. But I'm going to play Move the Crowd by Mrs. Betty Sun, and then we're going to go into Middle Passage by Tracy Lynn. Maybe by then Mac's phone will be charged.
Hold up. Before I bring out your feature, hold up. I need everybody's attention real quick. Up top, to look. I know y'all getting nice at the bar, y'all bellies are full, and I appreciate that energy because we need that love in here, but real quick. My man got something to say. He want to take the stage, but I need y'all to I need all eyes up here. I need focus. You know what I mean? If y'all could please, I mean, take the cafeteria, lunchroom, school shit, and break it down to a church sermon, like just for 5 minutes. My man got something he want to say to y'all. Hey, Shice, come on, man. Hope you can calm him down.
How could I move the crowd? It's a question I ask myself every day. New week beginning, the world still spinning in a social decline. Got so many thoughts on my mind, can't wait to get to the venue and share some issues. And I arrive and realize nobody cares about the poet's tears, ideas, hope, aspirations, and fears. See, he came for the ladies and she came for the drinks. And my mind starts to sink into a situation of deep dread, thoughts pounding in my head. But I'm called to the stage and I breathe. Read excerpts from the book of my life. Stand on stage, I turn the page, and I realize I'm talking to a crowd of closed minds and dead eyes. Just wanted to share the art, but the words get sacrificed upon the cross. Cause my sisters are dealing with her own pain. Another broken relationship, thought that man would be the one. And street violence took somebody else's son. And there's a daughter home pregnant at 14 in the hood, got a way of crushing all our dreams. Got a father upstate, a mother with a drug habit, you just can't shake it. I want to speak to the crowd about the African child soldier in the Congo with the AKs. But right here, we got juvenile gangsters stuck in their ways. You can give it to me, and I put it all in my book of poems and make a burnt offering to the mantle. Because if life is in shambles, trust me, ain't nothing you can't handle. But oh my God, it's hard. But tonight, we're going to turn this open mic into the afterlife. Here and now, it's heaven on earth. And it's going to get beautiful like a black baby's birth. Can't grip walk when I talk, get low when I spit fire. Spoken word, good deacon, need you to hum along with the choir. This is street life salvation, up ye mighty nation, off the plantation. I'm so real, I'm drinking 40 ounces of liquid freedom while weak minds work the field. And African blood still spills from the master's bullwhip. But he gonna have to slow down, I'll carry a full clip. How could I move the crowd? It's a sign on the door, no niggas allowed. I only came to build with the gods, head to the sky. Shice is your big brother, you can call on me. And Satan on your back, trust me, I'm knocking out all bullies. The devil ain't got nothing for me. I'm more powerful than the Negro spiritual. African legacy just rolls off my tongue like drums. Poetic rhythms to hip hop break beats when I speak to the gods. Peace.
Surrounded by pain and water on all sides, seek my
my language, no one responds. Might be the odds if I jump in the tide. Arrive to a land never been this cold. We the only ones who ain't wearing clothes. They treat me as if I'm gold. What happens next, I can't explain. All I know is I'll never be the same. They touch me like I was 18. Sleep in a shack and work like a horse. Son beat my back, he whips me more. Pulls down his pants and closes the door. Sleep in a shack and work like a horse. Son beat my back, he whips me more. Pulls down his pants and closes the door. 8, 9, 10, and I just stop counting. Becomes a routine to hear my shouting. Spends more time here than with his spousing. Nothing to lose, everything to gain. Childbirth, child soul, feel numb to pain. I miss African, don't remember my name. Somebody here teach me to read. Tell some word, F-R-E-E. Hide these letters so they can't see. Hangs from tree. He lived through unborn baby. Won't let this child feel slavery. Cabins where they keep them guns. Take them all and don't leave none. We might kill that cracker before we run. He gets scared and wants to turn back. He say he running out of breath. I point gun free, dumb or death.
All right, we're back, we're back, we're back. I do apologize, I ran to get some water, but we were listening to Move the Crowd from Mrs. Betty's Son, from his poem, his album, Poems in the Key of Life, and then that was part of Middle Passage by Tracy Lynn. And now we have Maximus Parsis on the line. How are you, sir?
Peace, my sister. It has been a while since we spoke, and it is a pleasure to hear your voice.
Yes, yes, yours too.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm sitting here. If you hear some nocturnal sounds, it's because I'm sitting outside in the country.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Nowadays it is indeed, man. Trying to be under the radar to the best degree that I can.
Yes, yes.
It's kind of hard, though, when you got a mouth as big as mine.
Yes. I know it's a few of you going the same way.
Yeah, I've been like so sleepless lately. I just really can't sleep well anymore. I don't know how anybody on this earth or even in this country can these days. It's just so crazy.
That's true. It is. There's so much going on, and you know what we can do is, you know. And not to get overwhelmed. There's a lot going on, and I think what the most of what's going on is ignorance. And I think that's the most frustrating part. But I think the only way to, you know, survive is to, you know, life comes one moment at a time. You can only do basically one thing at a time. And to get strategic and feel where can you do your best. You know, sometimes you can't wake up everybody, or sometimes you don't see all who you're waking up. So don't stop sharing, don't stop speaking, because the people you're speaking to, they may not necessarily be the ones listening, but that means your voice carries beyond those people.
Yeah, it's, overwhelmed, I reached that, I don't know, years ago. I've been overwhelmed for a long time. That doesn't stop me from functioning as I should. And you're right, there are those few out there who do care, who are concerned and are willing to make some changes in their life to try to make a difference to everyone around them. And to reach those few is very important. But I think
I'm going to tell you, you'd be surprised. I've been following young people lately. To honesty, they can be the ones that are more open.
Oh, trust me, I know. They're with you. I'm following the same groups.
And like, it's a group that I follow. They do radio shows and all, but they're between the ages of 14 and 17, and they're dynamic. They're in different fields, from social, from national social activists to fashionista, but they have the same mindsets, and they're extremely capable. You know, now I'll admit all of them have supportive parents and a supportive, you know, system around them. But why I feel they are so important is because I just saw this poster. We don't need to tell our children what to think. We need to teach them how to think.
I agree.
And I think that's the biggest thing we lost for over two generations is the ability to think.
I don't think that was a mistake.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't a mistake. If you take us back in slavery time, though we had less, our ability to think and problem solve was much greater than
it is
now.
Yeah, we had to think under duress at those times, and we're doing it now. We have to think under duress now for those that are aware of circumstances. And I got to give credit to the parents of those children because, you know, we do a lot of poetry and activism, people our age, you know, and stuff like that. That's wonderful. But probably the best thing we could possibly do is to teach our own children.
Yeah. It's to teach and teach our children and those willing to listen. But my biggest, you know, my one feat is to do things to teach them how to think. So people, like this one guy said, you know, I don't know, he went on for me because I posted something about Sojourner, an actual play. You know, we have a theater company, so I posted about the play Sojourner, and I used a headline, "Before Barack Obama, hip-hop and Harriet Tubman, there was Sojourner Truth." So he wanted to get on this whole political spiel, how dare I compare Barack Obama to freedom fighters and hip-hop to it, and hip-hop is just a Jew. I'm like, yo, dude, first of all, it's not about all of that. It was a statement to just simply explain that Sojourner Truth was a phenomenon that most people don't understand. They don't understand her impact and her presence on more than just her to sojourn for the truth, more than just freedom, women, rights, American history, period. You know, if you wanted to know that if there was an instigator to get, an agitator to get the Civil War going, Quiet as Kept, Sojourner Truth was the one. She knew how to get something started. She went from between presidents, she went from the South to get things started because her goal was to end slavery. So she did all she could do to make it happen. But that statement wasn't about what I felt about Barack Obama or hip-hop. And then I told him, he said, well, that's why you do spoken word. That's why you promote spoken word. I said, no, I promote spoken word, you know, because I like it. I like the art form, and I feel it helps build optimal thinking frames. But I also promote conscious hip-hop, you know. Yeah, you know, so, and I promote anything conscious. You know, my thing is that we need to surround ourselves with, you know, strategic thoughts, strategic thinking. We need to, you know, just, you know, infuse ourselves and our young people. I got a young group that does a show called State of Urgency, the National Action Network Youth Move Report. These are young people. The girl's 14 years old, and she also writes for one of the big blogs. And she is like, you know, I don't know how you adults don't do this, don't do that. She's like on it. The show's called State of Urgency. And
I like
have them, yeah, and I have them do a good music review. And hopefully some of the parents weren't upset. But, I mean, I play, you know, various spoken word or hip-hop, but things that, they're not corny, but they have put certain thoughts and mindsets so that they can have a choice as to what's playing on mainstream radio.
These types of music and stuff like that open the mind. Art has always been the initiator for all kinds of change. When you were speaking of the American Revolution earlier, and, you know, in those days, the book by Thomas Paine, Common Sense, was used to start the revolution. It was distributed. 600,000 copies were spread out amongst 3 million people in the country that time. And that was what was used to change their mindset, a piece of art.
And it's being done on a positive and negative end right now. So it's up to us. We have to stop begging. Like, you know, my goal with the Master Grill Project to make spoken word a viable industry, my goal was never to compete with mainstream. I don't even want to compete with mainstream. You know what? You know, I want to stay under the radar as long as we can and get done as much as we can.
Mainstream,
so by the time we hit the radar, we've built up a nation.
That's it. Mainstream is dead. We predicted like 7 years ago that internet radio would eventually become so easy to access that you would get it into the new cars, and it's there now, so people can listen to your show in their car as they're riding along, and giving people the option to be able to find what it is they want to hear rather than being force-fed what you think they should hear is definitely a popular feature that people are taking advantage of.
Yeah, and that's what they, you know, they're trying to fight with mainstream. I'm not trying to fight for mainstream. I'm not trying to make people do what's not in their best interest. I understand capitalism and business all day long. It's not in their best interest for the things that we're trying to get the government and get these corporations and all to do. Like Tommy said, a corporation goal is just to make profit.
Bottom
if you're presenting something that is not profitable, then why are they going to work against their own best interest? So we need to learn how to work in our own best interest. That's the thing about it. We can try to convince, tell other people what they should be doing for us, about, but what about what we should be doing for ourselves?
I would look at something like Black Wall Street as an example of what we can do for ourselves. You know, given the opportunity, we can create something better. We just have to find an opportunity. And we're really being oppressed at this stage, so it's hard to even find that chance. They don't want anything that doesn't fit into their mold to seep into this system. And that's exactly what happened with Black Wall Street. That's why it got burned down, because it was so successful. They were afraid that they would eventually take over, and they would have.
The thing about it, we don't even have to create another Wall Street. We just need to support each other, and that's the only thing. Because, you know, really our money's not worth anything. The next big money that's going to hit the market is Iranian money, and you can actually go buy it online. Somebody just gave me that tip. Like $25 worth of their money, you would get 100,000 of their denomination. And within a year, that will be the global currency.
Iranian money?
Mm-hmm. And I had to look it back up. They took me to the website. I will share that. But, you know, we just need to get locked, you know, unlock ourselves from the mindset of just what's here. You know, everybody's working on a global, you know, station and status. Our money's not backed by anything. Their money is backed by gold, and they right now they have the strongest money, and they're going to be the center for currency. So, you know, behooves us now, you know, so what if you throw away $25-$30 in purchasing something, or you do it a few times? You know, we waste money all the time, but we need to start, like, stop being skeptical of certain things and being wide open to other things. I mean, just by the mere fact that we keep let people come in and buy up our gold. I was like, and nobody was curious. I mean, why are they coming asking us to sell gold and buy gold? Do you not think that means that gold is of value? Why would you sell? The moment they said that, I didn't think twice about gold till they said it. And I said, you're not getting my gold. Because if you come around here asking me for gold, they have conventions and things. They come to big hotels and get everybody to bring their gold. I'm like, they trying to hoard? Heck no, they trying to hoard all the gold.
You know, for those that are listening now or later on that don't know me, there's three things that define me. I'm a militant, I'm an extremist, and I'm a reductionist. Those three things really tell you all there is to know about me. And you said earlier that we are getting to the point now where they're going to start picking us up in buses and taking us out to unnamed locations where we're never going to be seen again. At this point, I don't think our fight is even for wealth anymore. Our fight is for survival. It is really getting nasty in the field right now. Police are killing people on public television, and they don't care anything about it. They're not being held accountable. Their bosses aren't being held accountable. Their bosses' bosses aren't being held accountable. the Justice Department is openly selling guns to criminals, where their own agents are getting killed. They're being held in a contempt of court. Mississippi recently in the news because it was found out that they were farming off children to private prisons for profit. And as we know, the same thing happened with judges in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. So for me, it's not really about trying to get any wealth and put it aside. It's about trying to put water aside and food aside that might last me 2 or 3 weeks. But that could
be the wealth, and that's going to be the wealth and currency at the time. But what I'm saying is, like, just certain things, like when they come and say, hey, we'll buy all your gold, the dollar's not really worth anything. We have to start rethinking, you know, why sell what you have for a dollar that doesn't have any value anyway. You know,
if we make it another 5 years, we won't even have a dollar. It will all be a cashless society.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So don't, you know, give up the things that are tradable, that you could do something with. And gold has value all across the board. And get rid of those things that don't have value.
Indeed.
And do start stockpiling and finding. We have bombs and shelters, and, you know, those things do exist even in the city, in the middle of the city. Find out where's your closest bomb shelter. You'd be surprised. It's probably some neighborhood thing. They say, well, that's what this is supposed to be for, but we don't never really. And there's so many people in the communities that are doing survival training. And we think those people as extremists, but they're, you know, we all need to take survival courses. We need to, you know, listen up. The worst thing that can happen to us, we learn how to survive. When we know, if nothing else, there's a good chance a natural disaster is going to come our way. So it just behooves us. And I said it, honestly, years ago, saying we needed to come up with our own form of communication. And I don't even mean, you know, internet and computer, because that can be taken down and controlled at any time. I mean, we need to, like you said, our own underground railroad and our own coded language again. We need to
go
back to
that. Yeah, and I meant
that
in every sense of the word. Just like Angela Davis said, we do need right now a 21st century abolitionist movement. We do need an underground railroad. We do need a place to call safe that we can go to, you know, and we do need outside support, because our oppressor is our very own government, and we can't expect our oppressor to hear our pleas to them for leniency. They've never given it to us before, so we have to look outside now. And just like Malcolm said, we have to look to the international courts in order to get some kind of justice.
Yes, that's the truth. And we just have to start being mindful, and we have to start teaching these things. And that's the good thing about art and poetry. And I tell people like you and people like Brothers Keepers, and I know you guys always are angry and upset, and you should be, but at the same time, you have such a wealth of knowledge, and you have the ability to communicate it in a way that's non-confrontational, and it just seeps in.
I don't know if that's me. I am anything but non-confrontational. I'm like the wrestler
of poetry,
man.
But no,
I'm just saying that
in your poetry,
you know,
in your poetry and stuff like that. I mean, your poetry is confrontational, but see, that's the thing about it. That's the expectation of it. The expectation of the poetry is to be, you know, confrontational and all. But the point is, you know, to be the one that's giving real strategy, and that's not the one that's blowing up hot air.
Yeah,
because I'm the person, like,
air.
I hear it, and I hear it.
Yeah,
I hear it, I share it. And these people, there are people taking it in. And so, you know, when that's your gift, it's something about the rhythm and all
that.
Of that allows stuff to, flow through.
People,
again, that's our coded language. And right now, they're not paying attention to our poetry.
Some are hearing it. I've had kids come to me, well, not kids, but adults have come to me and told me they've been listening to me all their life. So I know that to some degree I'm influencing people's lives and their thought patterns. So I keep myself mindful of that and try not to screw up any lives on purpose.
Well, you don't do. But I'm just saying, if, you know, sometimes you want to do so much and get so much done, but sometimes you're getting so much done that you don't know because you're raising up the person that can do what you couldn't do.
Inspiring.
And you don't
the
know
next
that
Malcolm
person. You may have never saw, you may never see them. You may not even know that they're sitting there watching you or they picked up your CD somewhere. They could be following you on the internet. And this is not no, you know, like odd thing. Like the young lady, Mary Pat, that does the show State of Urgency, I connected with her because I was interviewing a teen author who she used to follow. So she followed the teen author. You know, they, you know, those young people are fans of one another. She followed the teen author that I was interviewing, and by the way, I got to know her. So I did the one interview with the teen author, and now Mary Pat has a show. She does a blog on Global Grind, and she just turned 14 this year.
Wow.
I mean, and she does things like, you know, Nicki Minaj, Shame on You. She busted down when the rapper in I think it was Source Magazine, and they showed the video of the guy, the rapper, that was telling the young guys, and his work was aimed toward middle school boys about how to stick their fingers up and do all of this kind of things to girls. And, you know, she went right after the editor and asked for the editor to be removed. I mean, she's out there. She takes it to the heart, to the extreme. And there are young people that follow. And it's just, they're just, she's in Atlanta. There's a strong group of them in New York. And then there are, you know, pockets of them throughout the country. So, and on this show, we do a positive music review. So, you know, this is what I'm saying. You would be surprised who may have heard you, who might hear you. And so just, I just say that to, you know your life is purposed. And, you know, perfectionists, you know, you're not getting done all you want to get done, and you don't feel everyone's hearing you who should hear you. But you have a purpose. And it's not after you die to discover all your work.
I understand.
People are listening to you right now.
These days, I'm actually kind of in a weird place. I kind of feel like I've already fulfilled my purpose. So I've got nothing to lose now. Everything I do is gravy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's my mind state. Like, you know, there's really nothing I've got to lose anymore. You know, it's all gravy now. I think that whatever purpose God had me serve is already done, and now he's allowing me to do what I want to do. And what I want to do is raise some hell. I would love to see a worldwide riot. It's the only way we're going to make any kind of change. We just had to get up in arms and say, we have had enough. You're not killing no more of my babies. You're not enslaving or putting in the prison no more of my children, my husbands, my wives, my daughters, my sons. We are people with lives, and we have value. And we refuse to accept this as tolerable anymore. That's what I'm hoping to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got to get you on as many radio shows as possible, right?
Yeah.
And, serious. You know, I mean, take advantage of internet and satellite radio. This is global.
I'm definitely down. By raising some hell, I'm all for it. Like I said before, a lot of people look at me as like the poet wrestler. You know, I come out and they cheer me on while I'm beating up the opponent. That's what I do. I have no problems with taking it to the biggest foes. I don't care who you are, from the president to the pope. It doesn't matter to me. You all put your pants on just like I do.
Yeah, and then your boy had your boy on. He came on because you saw Tommy's name, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought Tommy was actually on. I hadn't heard that one, man. Tommy's one of my favorite people in the world. One of the brightest guys I know. I don't necessarily always agree with him, but he is definitely insanely intelligent.
He's a genius. Tommy is a genius. And he's a genius. And, you know, He doesn't use all his powers for good. Tommy's a perpetual pessimist.
Yes, yeah, you know him well. He is a perpetual pessimist.
But he's definitely worth listening to and definitely worth respecting. And, we haven't even seen an inkling of Tommy's brilliance. You know, you may hear things, but he totally threw the other poet in that interview. That's why I said it takes an interesting turn. They didn't even get a chance to do poetry. The other poet was so thrown off by what Tommy said. And he threw him off so bad that, like he threw off his whole life purpose at the moment. He just really threw him.
You can't have a conversation with Tommy Bottoms and not be equipped for the job. You just can't do it. You know, I've been on the road with Tommy quite a few times. You know, we've spent times in hotels all night long just conversating. So, yeah, if you're not equipped for the job, you shouldn't even be conversating with that brother because he'll mess your whole mind up in 2 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's Tommy's biggest, people totally mistake him. His levels of brilliance, and you take his levels of brilliance with his I don't give a heck, that started off playing his piece, F you, Tommy, F you, Tommy.
Yeah, that's the calling card that we use when he comes on stage.
Yes, you know. My mom was like, what? I was like, it's okay.
Happy late
comes
birthday
to Philly
to him, by
day.
The
like
way.
I know people be like me, and it's a horror we be in the stands. F you, Tommy.
Mm-hmm. I think his birthday was like a week or so ago too. So okay. Happy late birthday, Tommy.
Yeah.
What's he like? 900 now.
He acts like it, and he's not that, but he acts like it.
He's got an old soul. He's got the mm-hmm. He's had wisdom passed down to him that he didn't have to learn. He was born with it, literally.
Yeah, and he's literally a genius. I mean, he's an excellent, writer. He's one thing. He is using more of his talents today than ever. You know, he does his Beautiful Lie, Ugly Truth show. I mean, he's really doing a lot of different things, and using his talent. You know, he's becoming that political commentator. So, and that's him. I mean, I've found sports articles. Tommy says, yeah, he's an authority on a lot. I found sports articles. I mean, he's just really, really knowledgeable.
Yep, and that's where he scares me when you talk about political analysis and stuff like that. I'm afraid that somebody like Tommy will get swallowed up by the political entities. And has the potential, because he is a capitalist, self-admittedly so, and has the potential to, if they get a hold of him and mold him, to do more harm than good. I mean, they might come up to Tommy and say, look, we're going to give you $2 million a year. We want you to do a show, but here's what we want you to talk about. Tommy will be in a quandary then. He's like, $2 million a year, and all I got to do is this?
Well... Tommy takes the $2 million and find a way to do what he wants. Tommy got some
sneak
things
attacking
that, Tommy got some things that keep him from, just doing whatever. That kind of goes against his grain. That's his whole thing, educated gangster. He tries to for a moment, and that's why he came up with his thing where he starts off. You try to make me go to rehab, but
no. He performed that live with us in Providence, Rhode Island at the Word Warriors tour, man. And the mayor was sitting in the audience, and he dropped that educated gangsters on him, and it was basically talking about people like that mayor.
Yeah.
You should have seen how fast the mayor left out of the room, and it was so funny because the mayor is openly gay. And his boyfriend was there, this big, really heavy black guy with a pink shirt on with a teddy bear on it. That was his lover, and they're together. So he's already controversial. And then Tommy dropped that educated gangsters. His face turned red, and he left the club. It was crazy. Georgia got up after Tommy and said, did you see the man run his ass out of here with his boyfriend? Tommy, you need to stop.
That's what I tell you, that urge for Tommy will probably keep him from successfully just, unless they just, you know, find that, you know, just him, you know, sometimes that alone, they'll support someone that's just controversial just for the fact of the controversy. I feel that people won't take them as serious. But
or just pay him to tame him. You know what I mean? He could be doing Just for Men commercials and shit. You know?
Yeah. Go for Tommy wants to, you know, I mean, if he actually listened to all his poetry, he feel he could make his money basically on his own. People can pay him to do different things or whatnot, but if
yeah, he's
Tommy,
the immortal technique of poetry.
Yeah, yeah. If he wanted, if it, Tommy wanted a record deal, or Tommy could have been had that. You know, Tommy been had the opportunity. Basic economics is, I am pretty much, I can say, is the most watched video of HBO Dead Poetry Dream. Wall Street Journal, they, if you go online, Freakonomics, Wall Street Journal, they are there trying to decipher the slang vernacular of Tommy Bottoms. And literally, you'll find them online. All these white people trying
it.
To.
I believe it. Especially with Trapwire in effect now.
Yeah, yeah, trying to decode it and understand, because they just can't believe that in 3.5 minutes this man sat down and broke down the whole economy system. Made it plain and compared it to drug dealing. And they're not offended by any of it. They're just
they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They just want to know how many people actually understand what he said.
Yeah. And so, believe me, you know, Tommy, I'm pretty sure he had all kinds, you know, if he didn't get all kind of offers, all kind of people been looking at Tommy.
Yeah, yeah. Tommy is the entity all to himself, man. He's a different caliber of poet and person. There's no doubt about that. He's definitely one of the people that I admire. Which is also funny, because earlier when you mentioned Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman, those are actually two of my idols. You know.
Yeah.
I don't have any modern-day idols. Those are my
idols.
Yeah,
we know more about Harriet Tubman than a lot of times we do Sojourner Truth, but we do a one-woman show about Sojourner Truth, and the playwright, he just brings up such interesting facts, and he makes her such a personality and character. It is such a good show. And that's why I said that, you know, and, you know, I made that statement because, you know, I was really trying to catch all ages and you know young people or 40 plus and under know hip-hop, you know, and everybody, you know, hip-hop is a phenomenon. So if you know hip-hop, you heard of a black president, you heard of Harriet Tubman, you ain't heard nothing till y'all heard Sojourner Truth. Okay,
tell them about it. Tell them about it.
Yeah.
Just listen to some of her speeches. I think they still have some on audio.
Yeah, but just her as a person, personality, she just was, well, you know, like one of these things she said, they came up and talked about her and said, how did she look like a man and was mocking her. She said, y'all used to, I sucked you with these things when y'all was a baby. Y'all used to suck on my breasts, and now y'all want to come talk to me, say I'm like a man and all. You don't believe my move? You know, she literally opened up her shawl and showed her breasts and said, you want to come up and suck? She said, just come in. I'm sorry. I know y'all's good Christian people, but I just got mad.
The one I relate with the most, though, is Harriet Tubman. I can't help but relate with her because, you know, just thinking about how she felt when she said that she'd freed hundreds of slaves, she could have freed thousands more if she could have just convinced them that they were slaves. And that's where I find myself.
Yeah, yeah, that's the truth. But Harriet Tubman's idol was Sojourner Truth. Harriet Tubman was younger than Sojourner Truth. Harriet Tubman was a little girl when Sojourner Truth was around, and she used to sit under Sojourner Truth, and Sojourner Truth was her idol.
Well, we need more Sojourner Truths and less Nicki Minaj's. That's what we need right now. We need these kids to be inspired by something real, something worth fighting for, worth living for, worth dying for.
And this is the part I don't know. When my neighbor's daughter, my neighbor is a minister, and his daughter wishes Nicki Minaj was her mother. You know, that's a mentality I can't even get past. And I can understand, maybe, you know, I can understand if at the age liking Nicki Minaj, her look or whatnot, but to wish Nicki Minaj was your mother, that's just a mentality I can't fathom.
I guess compared to the strict upbringing that a pastor or a priest might give their daughter, maybe I can understand her
Yeah, she lives with her father, but actually she lives with her father, their mother. They don't live with their mother. So they visit their mother on a weekend. So it's not really, mother's not strict. That's what I'm saying. You know, they wish that, I don't know. It just, you know, it just surprises and it shows the depth and the mentality of some of our young people and the impact of what the mainstream is having on them. That is not, you know, super cool. So,
Yeah, it's not cool at all.
You know.
But, you know, that's how they do things. That's how they insinuate into the children's mind what they want them to do. You know, marketeers have the technology of manipulating children down to a science. So they know exactly what it is to appeal to their nature, to make them want something or to want to be like someone. And they use that in ways that are designed simply to indoctrinate A and to turn them into consumers B.
Yeah, yeah. They're definitely perpetual consumers.
And we're the voices that fight against that. You know, people like us. We're the ones that are the voice of reason every now and then that pops up and goes, hey, wake the hell up. Quality is not real.
You know what? Sometimes it's just necessary to have an alternative out there. Because some people, you know, I mean, some people just can't change their minds. But then there are some people that see and, like, say, it got to be more than this. And that's where you need to have options and alternatives. And, you know, because they're looking like, wait a minute, you know, these scenarios aren't fitting. This is not making sense. And then that's where you need to have options and scenarios. And that's where you see these other young people who come out and say, look, I'm not cool with all the killing. I'm not cool with what they're doing. I'm not cool with what's going on. I'm not accepting this. And they are looking for options, and they're looking for adults to stand up. They, you know, they acknowledge that they can't do everything, and they want adults to stand up. So,
I'd like to see people be more honest when it comes to art, to be, you know, in my opinion.
If you see
something that's crap and that really is hurting society more than helping, say so. I mean, you know, just like you put it on Facebook, put it on their little post that they put up with their music CD that says, I'm going to kill such and such, and everybody's a hoe and a bee and so on and so forth. Instead of saying, cool, say, this is trash. You know what I mean? Your mother would smack you for writing this. What is wrong with you? You know?
That is part of mentality, what I was saying. Even like when you go out on the street, I mean, you don't have to be rude and all the people, but you don't have to sit and watch someone do the wrong thing and not say, yo, this is not cool. It doesn't mean that they're going to listen to you. It doesn't mean that they're going to respond. It doesn't mean that they may not cuss you out. But your realm of control over others you don't have, but you have it over yourself. And to me, if you stand and watch it happen, you're just as guilty.
Amen.
You're just
Amen.
As guilty. And if you're saying, well, I don't want to get hurt, innocent people are getting shot and killed all day, every day. So proof is in the pudding that you can't stop a bullet no matter what.
And don't worry about hurting somebody's feelings. You may be saving somebody's life.
Yeah, they worry about their own feelings. I can't run off kids cuss you out. I've been cussed out by people on Big Wheel. I don't care. I'm like, okay, you know, but I don't care. You know, I see a young girl, an older woman tells her something, and she's disrespectful. I'm like, no. I was like, whoa, honey, you can't speak to her like that. And they can make it whatever. I said, I don't care. Whatever it is, you don't speak to this woman like this. It's not okay. And where's your parent? They'll lie. They lie. But it's okay. You know, things come around. I've had them do that on my block lie. And this girl was so mad. She just wanted to beat up this girl so bad. She didn't know. She actually walked down to my house. I saw her later on in my house trying to start stuff. I'm like, okay. You want to do all that? I think I need to call the cops. Because now you in my territory. You know, I was up the street then. Well, then
some people are just a little
okay,
too sensitive.
Yeah, because she said she didn't even live on our block. The kid said, yeah, she do. She live at this house, this and that. They all told, when the cops, they told on her. You know, she wasn't arrested, but they told her, you know, where she lived so they could go to her parents, and she got in trouble because I haven't seen her back down. But that's what I'm saying. Sometimes we just don't understand, and we act like we're so scared, and a lot of times it's what I did. I kept that child probably from getting locked up, for real, for real. Because she was so furious, she was going to she was not going to end that day unless she hurt that girl. I don't know what happened with her and the girl. But she was to the point she was disrespected this other woman, an older one. She just was, she was out of it. And if I hadn't stopped her, deterred her, and it finally got back to her mom.
Misdirected,
you know,
ire.
Yeah, but I mean, but because everyone was too scared, you know, the older woman wasn't, but I stepped in because she was way out of line with this older woman, and, you know, her temper was there, so I had to stand between her and the older woman. But, you know, those are the things you do, and then that could have been a way worse situation. Somebody could have been hurt. That girl could have really been in jail, you know, at that point. You know, kids saying where she lived and all. I'm pretty sure they just took her to her parent, and she just got told on.
And her
but,
being in jail would have been exactly what the system wants.
Yeah, and
exactly
that would have been the worst thing ever. Then we would have been breeding a criminal.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so as I'm saying it, there. And I would have been just as responsible if I had just walked by and let her just walk by the situation.
You know. That mindset that you're expressing right now translates across the board. You know, I was just having a discussion online today about the police shooting in New York. They've got the full video. Everybody can see what happened. A dozen policemen chasing one black guy with a knife. They run him down, and they shoot him about a dozen times. Mm-hmm. The guy's got a knife. There's 12 of you with police cars, and you all got tasers. But the only way you can solve this problem is by killing this man. Which is par for the course for the police these days, you know?
Yeah, well, they went out and got these real big guns, and they said, well, we need it because the guns that they're carrying Tech Nines and all, so we need Tech Nines. Who ever heard of something like that? And
yeah,
now you got more reasons to pull them, and now you can pull up on anybody, you know? I actually worked at a residential home for boys, and the boys would not even be on a corner. Now, we know you don't stand on the corner. You stand on the corner, now you privy to whatever might happen, and that's on you.
That's why
you
I moved to South Carolina from New Jersey, to get rid of corners.
Yeah, so we know, we tell them, don't stand on the corners, and that's from, you know, the cops to trouble. You know, it's the corners is where it's going to happen first. But these boys were in the midst, they had several houses on the block. They're in front of their kitchen, sitting down, just talking. And they want to come in and ask them, and we had to come out there talking about we wanted to know what these guys were doing. They're sitting on the steps to their building. What do you mean, what are they doing? They walked up in one of in the home. Who just walks into a home? Who just walks up in there to feel that,
American,
you know,
Police Department does that today. Nowadays, they do that easily, and they will shoot you when they walk in your home with no warrant. And put it on video on YouTube so everybody can see it and say, na, 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 na. And that's what you were saying about, you know, people really remaining silent are accomplices to it. And that's what I was telling this guy that replied, talking, you know, about, he was trying to justify the circumstances, saying, what if the guy would attack one of the police with a knife? You know, as far as I'm concerned,
what
the guy
if?
Saying
he
that is an accomplice.
He would attack him with a knife. What if? I mean, you know, first of all, he would have to go after them first. No one's saying you should not defend yourself, but if he's running, if cops are running after him just because he has a, my cousin was shot that way, was killed, and, yeah, they got $1 million from the city, but she lost her 15-year-old son. They said he had a starter pistol, but he was shot in the back.
Just like the guy that was shot with handcuffs on in a police car just recently.
Yeah. And, you know.
That's how they operate, and that's how they function. And it really only affects the minorities, particularly now with this stop and search process that they've got going on in major cities like San Francisco and New York, and even in London. You know, it's overwhelmingly aimed at minorities. And 90% of the people that they stop, the minorities they stop, don't have any kind of criminal record or problem or issue whatsoever. But nonetheless, they still have to endure this day after day. There's an interview I saw on RT with one young brother out in England who said he gets stopped on the average between 5 and 10 times every week.
Mm-hmm. But that thing used to happen to my husband when he was alive. He had an account. He was an area manager for a cleaning company, and he had an account out, and it was called Exton, Pennsylvania, which means, you know, you go past the city limits. And it was actually an overnight job, and he would take the guys out there, but they would take the train to this stop called Overbrook, and there really was no place to go directly, public transportation going directly out to Exton, so he would pick them up and drop them off in Exton. And when he was in a car with them, they, you know, they got stopped about 3 or 4 times a week. They're going the same group of people, going the same place, doing the same job. It was like par for the course. They used to just, like, burn him up. And but, you know, we know that, you know, black male on that side of the county, you know, it's just like one of those things.
Even a half-black president hasn't made a dent in that. It's still the same circumstances. Same situations. I just saw police release attack dogs on a woman
it's worse
and a child.
Because, I mean, the way, you know, I mean, they really started rearing their heads when he came into play, you know, a black man as president. You know, whatever used to be undercover, they all above board. They letting you know what they think you are, this and that. So it definitely has not stopped any of that. And
it hasn't made a dent in it at all. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about Barack Obama because I will cause too much problems just even mentioning it. But he has not done anything that I've seen or that I've read of that is aimed at specifically helping black people in America, the people that need it the most right now. And he hasn't done anything to help them in particular. His whole concept is this one America thing, but there are two Americas, and everybody knows it.
Yeah. Well, the one thing, I don't know. I know everybody say he hasn't done anything, but the one thing I know different, and it's happened in our local government when we had a black mayor, not all the time, but when Mayor Good was the mayor, and him, and the one thing you realize by being in business or whatnot, the difference is, he gives us access to information that we normally would not have access to. Before, those things we would be put out, but if you weren't in the right circle, you would not know that. You wouldn't know that these government contracts, these, you know, opportunities and things were out. Now, when they come out, they're immediately in our, you know, media, whatnot, whatever, we get the same notice that everybody else gets. So what happens, more people get the chance to get the opportunity to come in to the table and to benefit.
Well, I'm not familiar with that aspect, and I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on it.
Well,
but
that's, you know, maybe because I work in nonprofits with federal funding and, you know, as a business person with federal funding and grants and things where you, like, you knew certain things because you work with certain, like, if I work with a white nonprofit, there were definitely information that I would know and be privy to than if I work with a black nonprofit. You wouldn't get all of that.
Gotcha.
One thing he's in, that access to that same information, same grants and opportunities, is funneled through all pipelines. Now, maybe because of social media, all of that makes it, you know, more transparent, whatnot, but it's the first time we've, at the same time it happens, had access to it, know about it, and the opportunities to bid quicker. And I know that's not, you know, down on a little level, but, you know, on every level, but the ability to come to, you know, to actually be at the table, because, like, stuff that almost only affects black folks, total white agencies get all the money, and then they disseminate it out, and it gets disseminated out to all of their friends and organizations.
Like feudalism.
Mm-hmm. And then we, you know, we lucky, you know, they may have one token black organization that can get some of the money.
Well, you know what we do with scraps? We make chitlins.
Yeah,
you know?
But, you know, they always pick an organization. They always pick an organization. When it's like that, they pick an organization that's not going to do well with the money. And they know it. Somebody's just basically going to take the money, steal the money. Then they can say, look, we tried to give y'all an opportunity. But that hasn't been the case now. If nothing else, for them to get it, you know, they have to bring us to the table one way or another. I've even seen some organizations now are shutting down. And it's not just black, but, you know, some of them, you know, Philly can be good for the good old boys club. And even one of our major award organizations getting ready to shut down, and it's purely because the same five theaters, ever since they've been in existence for 40, 50, 60 years, have gotten all the awards. And at this day of transparency and access and things to the internet and all, they never gave the blacks any, and minorities. You can just forget them. But even the young whites, like 30, 35, they've stopped supporting. They're like, we're not going to give you our money. And no one else gets to come to the table but the same, you know, group. And so now they're literally shutting down because I know they're not being funded. And so in those areas and things, you know, I have seen, you know, so the ability to get to the table for businesses to be able to play and to be able to be, especially those that are more than just solopreneurs, the ones that have employees, to be able to employ because you can get some of this funding and grants. Working with the Broadband Initiative, and there are a lot of urban, there are more than half of the organizations, I would probably say three-quarters of them are actually black. And if that had been another era, though most of the population that they're targeting are black or Latinos, that not nearly as many black and Latino organizations would have even been a part of this. It would have been all white organizations who funneled it out.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I don't know if that could be attributed directly to him. It could be just some underlings
in his
administration.
His use of social media and, as far as his communication systems, the way he even got in and all, I think with his use of social media and all of that, you know, or even if it's the people you put in place, they make sure those same communication channels are being used to get out information. So that that's probably, you know, the one thing. I
would like
say
to see him
much
speak
more
out on particular issues, though. I mean, any president, actually, not just him, but any nominee that people are looking for should be speaking out on particular issues that mean a lot to us. One, the private prison industrial complex. The Mississippi situation is just an example. The Philadelphia or the Pennsylvania situation with the judges are another example. That stuff is slavery with no question about it, and it's indoctrination. It's taking children from schools and putting them directly in prisons on purpose for profit. So you're basically selling children. And any presidential nominee should be speaking on that issue and should be condemning it to no end. You know, certain nations have barred
people coming out.
From
a lot
countries.
Of people that even supporting it, they're part of it. Like the 700 Club, they're doing a lot for child trafficking. you know, put a lot of money. But, you know, the only thing, I can't even talk about that.
Well, that's
but,
something that the president should be speaking of, because it falls down to the Justice Department, and that's Eric Holder. That's his
boy.
Right there.
Oh, yeah, they definitely should speak of it, but they're not going to do it in election year, because it doesn't matter
how serious you are,
how good your intent is. Anything you do, anything you say is all going to get turned around. It's going to be get turned around. It's going to be get turned around into something else. I just, you know, it's like, and I'm just amazed how people keep feeding into it. Like, y'all know the game. Why do y'all feed into that? And then y'all go put somebody else in, and then y'all going to complain about them. And then at the same time, enough people don't participate in the process, don't take advantage of what is there. And then they had this big expectation for everybody to do so much for them. So I don't even want to, I'm not going to even get on this soapbox. You
yeah,
know,
I
my whole
you
thing
that.
Is like, I just know when Reagan was in, all the laws and different things that he changed that literally affected my life.
He was the biggest criminal of all. He was the biggest criminal of all. It actually started with, I would say that most of the root of the evil that we have right now started with Nixon. Nixon was the first real presidential criminal that we had. And he was the reason that we had a president who was not elected into office. His original vice president had to resign before he did, before the president did. And then Ford took over afterwards, and Ford was chosen by Nixon. He wasn't a, you know, part of his electoral process. He was chosen by Nixon afterwards, and Ford became the president. So he was our first non-elected president. And the first thing that Ford did was pardon all those criminals, including Nixon. And ever since then, every president has done the exact same thing. They have done as much dirt as they can possibly do, and then pardon everybody at the end of the term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
really
I just know, like, with Social Security, yeah, just so much is just that they've done, and... You know, so if we think by putting in some kind of Republican president, it's going to be even better, it's not.
Well, my political views, as I said earlier, are extreme.
And stop accepting, I mean, and stop expecting somebody else to do stuff for us in the first place.
Yeah, you shouldn't be expecting your oppressor to take care of you. It just doesn't make sense to even ask, you know.
No, he's going to take care of himself. Take care of you, whatever's necessary to get you in position to do what he needs you to do. Outside of that, it's just, you know, why?
I had a discussion with the campaign manager for the Ron Paul organization about something like this. And at one point, I was seriously considering even supporting Ron Paul. But after my conversation with him, I decided that that was not in our best interest. Basically, his whole scenario was we should trust Ron Paul because he's trying to, you know, bring the Constitution back and to adhere to it. But in my ears, basically all I heard was we are just going to take everything you have and give you the opportunity to start all over again. And that's all we ever hear. Take everything we've got, everything we've established, rip it away from us, and then tell us we get a fresh start and we're supposed to be happy for that. And that's just not the case.
Yeah. Conservative means to hold on to, in the way this country was built was off the backs of other people, and the Democrats, that's just like moving chairs around on a sinking ship.
Yeah, that blows my mind too, because the Democrats was actually the main force behind keeping slavery in place. The Republicans were actually fighting against slavery to a major degree. They were the abolitionists, and the Democrats were the slave owners. And here we are in 2012 with a complete reversal of fortunes. And you have to wonder, are we really following the right people?
Well, I mean, I really think following parties, I'm not going to lie, nothing will get me to follow the Republican Party, because they definitely... You just don't care. They're about the 1%. And then the ones that don't realize that the Republican Party about the 1%, they're just stupid. And that's just the whole, you know, you put your light against the dark, the overseer against the field nigga. That's just part of that whole mentality. You know, they don't catch it. And,
you know,
as far as the Democrats, I look at the Democrats as allowing us, the Democrats, now, they say I feel it better, but it gives me the, at least I had the opportunity to breathe, to fight, and to the opportunity to make something for myself. I just saw, you know, like when Reagan and one who came in and took Social Security away, do you know that though my, I had a husband who died, I cannot get his Social Security until I'm age 59 and a half, and I can't remarry in between. When my husband passed, he had a son 19 years old in college who could not, who was too old to get his father's Social Security because Reagan changed the law that you couldn't get it after the age of 16. It's, you know, minor stuff you don't think about, but crazy stuff like that, that affects you. This stuff has adversely affected our lives, you know.
Yeah, and that was just a little piece of what's affecting everybody, even till now.
Yeah.
I have an idea that I would like to present to you, and just by speaking it into existence, I could potentially be releasing a very dangerous situation or an absolute blessing like none we've ever seen before. But I think that you are potentially one of the people who can bring something like this into fruition in the right way. You're familiar with, of course, you're familiar with American Idol, right? And you see all the spinoffs, how everybody's doing it, you know, America's next top model, America's next poet, blah, 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 blah. Why don't we do something like that for a presidential candidate chosen by the people and for the people? I'm not talking about, I'm not talking about a candidate that's already chosen. I mean, where we have a show like that where America votes on who they want to be their next candidate. And we put them through a whole process, you know, where they ask questions and stuff like that and turn it into a big, huge event. I mean, we bypass the political parties completely as a people and pick our own candidate. And then back
and And even if, you know, if it, it gets to the point that we don't actually – quote-unquote, elect the president, it will make, and this is the biggest thing, you have to bring people around and make everybody accountable. And that's what we had to make people uncomfortable in the positions that they're in. They can't be comfortable to do business as usual. We're going to have to make them feel that they're going to have to toe a line and be accountable to the people, and they can't just keep doing what they want. And something like that will definitely make them feel accountable, because we will be bringing up issues issues and information that is never discussed or shared with the general public and the people. And when they do that, and even if it's just a show, now they're going to go back, wait a minute, this is this law, this is that, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? Why aren't you? And then not just information to make them go back and do that. At the same time, we're bringing up viable candidates.
Yep.
That the people are already falling in love with.
Falling in love with on national television.
Yeah, and then we'll make those people that are in place start thinking 2, 3, 4, and 5 times.
Yeah, I think
about
it would
their
be
position if they, you know, if that's what, now that's
powerful.
What you call healthy competition.
Yep, we would literally be creating a third party, and it would have the support of the American people because, you know, you see how successful these shows are. Imagine America's next president, like America's top model. It would be outrageous. People would love it. They'd be texting in their votes for who they want and so on and so forth, and we'd have, you know, a whole criteria of questions and scenarios that they would have to go through to pick who is going to get eliminated and all of that. It would be fantastic.
Hey, Max, let's do this. I'm serious. We write it up because you know what? The shows, networks would want to pick it up because they wouldn't take it seriously, which is cool. They would just, but they would want to pick it up because this is a great reality, whatever.
Yeah.
This is real great, real interesting.
I don't see any reason for them not to pick it up. I think that that's the scary part I mentioned earlier. It has to potentially be dangerous because somebody with enough money could redirect all of that focus in any way they wanted to. So you'd have to be real careful.
Yeah. And that's the growth of it. But initially, well, what they probably do, take the idea and on, you know, the different networks will want to sell it. Hey, just sell it, give you like $80,000 for it, and just want you to like walk away. Nah, that's okay. We'll keep some more control over this. But
Well, if you ever decide to move forward on it, let me know. You know, I threw it out in the air into the world because I know what you speak into existence can possibly come true. And
you write
one of those
down,
people that can make
know,
it happen.
Write the vision down, make it plain. You know.
Sure.
I'm not the super politic person, but with you know, it's called the a treatment is what will
yes treatment. I've been writing the treatment for a while.
I know the format, but the main thing, you know, what would the challenges be? What would the criteria, you know, for judging, identifying,
yep.
Write up a synopsis. You know, I think we can kind of break it all out ourselves because we don't really need, you know, in order to keep that kind of control. But
yeah,
like
if you, somebody like Randy Jackson, he would jump for joy with just the idea. Because he knows
well,
there are
a lot
of
people, yeah,
millions
I mean,
upon millions.
Yeah, yeah, there are a lot of people out there. You know, we can take some stuff like this to the network. They're always looking for good shows. It's just we got to write it out and get it registered. And I even know producers who will shop it.
Well, give me about a week and I'll send you what I have as a treatment so far. I've already had discussions with a number of people in private before I decided to expose this here today with you. And we've come up with some criteria, and I'm sure it'll be changed over time. But at the very least, we'd have an outline. Like,
yeah.
One thing we don't want is a rich president. We don't want another millionaire in office. Like, there's just no reason for it. You need somebody who can relate with the average American, and a millionaire is not that person.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So, it's definitely doable. Right now is the time for certain things like this. They don't, and especially with the expectation, you know, there are two ways to go. You know, some people are going to definitely see the vision of this and where this could go.
Oh, yeah, 2016
you know,
could see the first viable third-party candidate chosen by the American people.
Yeah, definitely. And then some people will just see this as a, you know, a pulley or whatnot. But I have a lot of ideas for, you know, televisions, and I'm just writing them down. I have another one like this, and a couple of the ones may take a little bit more funding. But that's good to take to the table where, you know, they just need a little more funding. And then the other thing, too, like shooting a pilot. That's kind of one of the good things if we get to, you know, a pilot shot. So the visual is already there.
Yeah, I don't know how we could do a pilot unless we do an enactment, maybe. You know, have people portraying what would go on. But you can't really shoot a pilot to a reality show beforehand, I guess.
Yeah, you do. People do it.
Well, yeah, you'd
because
have to
they
kind of
want to, they, you know, they, nowadays, you know, you do it. You just, you know, you get a group. They're not doing it for pay. They're just doing it because they want to. But, yes, you get a group of people who want to participate serious, and you do. Not a 13-episode pilot, but you do, you know, 2-3 episodes to show how, you know, how things work, how it would run.
Imagine
and when you get that on video, it's much easier to sell it.
Imagine a scenario like this in America's Next President, if it were such a show to begin with, where one of the things you did, you had a number of contestants, and they're required to go spend 3 days in the projects, living in the projects with somebody, just so they can get that perspective. You know what I mean?
Hey, excellent.
And then bring them out and question them afterwards.
See, those are the kind of things you come up with. Because, you know, I have a show like that I have in mind for Spoken Word. And, you know, it's just coming up with the challenges. I think that kind of stuff is great. And I think you said the next people's, the people's president.
The
That's
people's
what call
president
it.
Is what it would
the people's
be. You're
president.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The people's president.
And he wouldn't have to worry about support because the people who chose him, you know, via that show would be his supporters come the election time.
Mm-hmm. The people's president.
Huge numbers. I mean, American Idol, I believe at one time, had like 30 million people call in. Could you imagine what this would have?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a third of the nation would definitely be involved, at least a third.
Yeah. And these are people, and it would be their job to get out and go get people to call in for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you, it would be great, man. It just, you know, put them in all these different scenarios and you know, judging their character along the way until you get one final and you go, that's America's next president. The people's president.
Well, Max, I think we are way over time.
Oh,
I don't even know. I'm wondering if the show is still recording.
I don't know. I'm
but
outside.
But this has been great.
Well,
your show don't take long to charge. You sure got good time left.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm on the home phone.
On.
I'm on
okay.
the home phone. That's how I ended up outside.
Oh, okay. I just meant, okay. And, all righty, well, we're going to just close this out, but that's good. But, yeah, do get back, Max, you know. Hey, the worst they can tell us is a no, but these days you can shoot it yourself and honestly create your own webisode. That's
well, I'll send you what I've got.
But
don't feel, I mean, feel free to do anything you want to do with this idea. I put it in your ear for a reason. So, you know, don't hold back from it. If you come up with something you want to add to it or if you just want to move forward with it, just go ahead and do it. I want to see it happen, to be honest with you. I think that it would make a big difference in our future.
Yes, I do too. I think it'll be really good.
All
righty then, Max. So I'm going to speak with you and everybody on Master Griot Radio. This has been, it's been good. Main thing, stay conscious, stay aware, start doing for self.
Indeed.
And
stay free and stay alive.
Yes. We speak for you. Peace and love.
Peace.